Welcome back to Creative Therapy Umbrella. This is a place where we talk about all different types of creative arts therapies, expressive therapies, and creative approaches to therapy. My name is Kate Shannon. I am a licensed clinical professional counselor and a board-certified music therapist, and I am your host. I'm pumped about today's episode. Molly Warren is just a lovely, lovely human being, and she takes us on a journey today talking all about how beautiful the combination of music therapy is with trauma survivors. So she talks in this episode so much about so many different takeaways. I feel like there are so many tangible takeaways in this episode. Her person-centered and humanistic approach is just so lovely, as well as how she talks about how her approach is informed by the neurological sciences. And she even shares specific intervention ideas that she's used along the way to support children and different who are dealing and working through different trauma experiences. And towards the end of the episode, she talks about the 6 R's of regulation, which was so cool. And if you don't follow Molly currently on TikTok and or Instagram, I encourage you go do so now, especially if you're looking for music therapy or if you're looking for specifically trauma. She's got just amazing reels and TikToks about trauma. And I love the tidbits of information we can learn from TikTok. And Molly does just a really beautiful job at it. So Molly is a licensed professional music therapist. She received her degree in music therapy from Colorado State University. She also has experience working at a flagship residential treatment facility where she was trained in the neurosequential model of therapeutics and relational therapy, specifically working with individuals with trauma and neglect backgrounds. She currently works in Reno, Nevada in her own private practice called Olive Branch Therapeutic Services, where she primarily works with individuals with complex or developmental trauma and attachment disorders. This episode is one not to miss. Molly is full of information. Before we hop into our episode, I wanted to let you know that there is a new course that is currently out right now that I did in collaboration with Music for Kiddos. And the course is called Out of the Music Box. And it's all about supporting music therapists and music educators, or even parents, caregivers who are musical and they're looking for ways to expand their interventions, session ideas, activities to be multisensory, to include other art forms that are, you know, obviously within our scope of practice. If you know me or have listened to the podcast at all, you know how much I like to talk about scope of practice and how important it is. But in this particular course, it's all about how to expand your interventions to include things like movement, creative movement, and storytelling, and narrative, and poetry, and, you know, things like using games and play, all within our musical scope of practice. So it's pre-approved for 6 CBMT credits right now, and it is on sale for the next 2 weeks for $20 off. The course literally has a 60-page workbook. I know that sounds insane. Once I finished it, I just sat back and was like, I just wrote a book. So it's huge. And in the workbook, it goes through the foundation of learning these different things. So you have a strong foundation, as well as learning about the different skills that you need to learn. It goes through that, and it goes through expanding your skill set in creativity and how to think outside of the box. And then there are 10 plus intervention ideas. There are 10 like very detailed takeaway interventions in there that you can just take and plug right in, loads and loads of more ideas throughout the whole training. But there is a lot. It also comes with 2 live office hours. One of them is a Q&A style office hour. So that's just all questions about clarifying different topics and different approaches and foundations that come up throughout the course. And then the second office hour is a resource share. So like everyone gets to bring their creative ideas in. We can brainstorm ideas, workshop ideas. I'm just so, so pumped. I think this was, well, these past couple of months with the launch of MTPC, Music Therapy Podcast Collective, as well as the launch of this course, Out of the Music Box with Music for Kiddos, I sincerely feel like I just birthed two babies, not physically, but it's just amazing to be able to share what I have learned, what I've been so grateful to have learned, and I just hope to pass that on to other people as well, because I think there's a lot of us out there who really believe in the power of creativity and how it can support the children that we work with. And I'm just thankful to be able to do that. And so thank you for being a supporter of the podcast. Even if you're not interested in the courses, there are tons of ways you can support us, you know, following us on Instagram and subscribing, leaving a review is, I can't tell you how powerful that is when you leave a review. So if you ever get a chance, you can support us that way too. And I'm endlessly, endlessly appreciative. But enough of all that stuff, all of that sappy stuff before I start to cry with my feelings of thankfulness. We are going to hop into this amazing episode with Molly, and I will talk to you a little bit more on the other side. Enjoy. All right, Molly, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I am really excited to talk about this topic with you. We've already covered like so many important things air.
I'm so excited.
Yeah. I know. It's like we should have hit record 20 minutes ago.
I know. So I was like, things. Wow, there was a lot of good stuff there, but
yes.
It's okay. We can revisit it.
Like we said, we just may have to do several episodes.
That's yeah, which I am totally down for.
Same. Well, for our listeners, can you tell us a little bit about the services that you provide?
Yeah, sure. So I currently offer individual therapeutic interventions for and services for children, adolescents, and adults, primarily with trauma and neglect backgrounds. But I also work with individuals with anxiety and depression and general mental health as well. I mostly get my referrals through I live in Reno, Nevada. So like our Child Advocacy Center and our Victims of Crime Program. And the sexual assault response team through Washoe County, I usually get a lot of my referrals through them. So I work primarily through populations for violent crime and sexual trauma. I do family sessions as well. I typically encourage family sessions when I have parents that bring their children in for therapy. And I do this specifically because, I want the client to know that they aren't the quote-unquote problem. Yes. And most issues I usually see are systemic. So I like to have a collaborative effort from the families. And I also want to support, parents so they can provide more trauma-informed interventions at home and to encourage, a regulation over compliance approach and philosophy. Mm-hmm. And just to support parents as well, because they're secondary trauma survivors and this is difficult for them as well. I did have a trauma-based group, but honestly I just really like working individual sessions now. I think after working an inpatient where we just do groups all the time, mm-hmm. So to finally do individuals, you're like, oh, this is so nice. You just get so much more done and it just
– you focused.
Yeah, and you just get a chance to really build, rapport with your client, and it just feels so much better. So, So I just I'm just doing individuals and family sessions right now. But
that is awesome.
Yeah.
I love it. You said something that immediately I was like – had to resist jumping out of my chair because I'm really excited that you said it. You said regulation over compliance.
Yes,
can you tell
ma'am.
Us a little bit? Yeah. Tell our listeners a little bit about what that is in case they don't know.
Right. So our jobs as guardians and caretakers, therapists, it's our job with children is to teach them, right? And to nurture their development. And compliance doesn't exactly serve you well, forcing kids into compliance. So when a child is escalated and we try to implement the learning objective then, that's a tall order. So if I'm yelling let's say at my husband, which I never do, but anyways, but if I'm yelling at him and he's like, hey, let's have a discussion of how you're treating me right now, I'd be like, what the heck? You know,
yes.
It's like, and if anything, like in our more peer-to-peer relationships and stuff, we're like usually allow more rooms for us to calm down. Or revisit things, but we don't really give children too much agency and autonomy in regulating themselves. We usually want them to comply in the moment, and I totally get it. Talking with a lot of the parents that I work with, they don't want to feel like they lose control of the moment. But if you regulate your child first, your child is calm, and then you introduce the learning objective or, you know, the expectations or consequences, then the child hears you. You know, it's kind of pressing a space bar on a frozen computer when you're it just totally sets them up for learning, and then they really hear you and then you can have a conversation. But when kids are escalated and you're just forcing them to comply, it usually doesn't go very well. If anything, it really escalates the situation. I think I see this a lot in I've seen it a lot in like inpatient centers where I've worked in, where I think we just like are trying to, you know, we have so many kids and you just want them to adhere to rules. But that's when I think if we didn't focus on regulation first, we would just really see clients and patients get out of control. You know, and also when we regulate first, that also kind of allows us to validate and hold space for our littles. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, okay, I see you. I see that this is hard. Let's talk about it. Let's hold space, you know, and then we get into the more serious aspects where we guide, parent, teach, you know.
Yeah. Yes. And holding that space is so valuable for kids to experience that. Oh my goodness. And it's hard as an adult or as a parent to like, you have to regulate yourself before you can even do that, you know?
Yeah. I always tell my parents and I tell people that I supervise, it's regulate yourself first. Check in with yourself first. You have not lost control. If you tell your child, I need to take a second, I will be back in 10 minutes to revisit this. Or even tapping in with like maybe your partner or someone else, you know, if you're a clinician and there's another clinician available or a tech or whatever, it's like, hey, I am escalated because we all have our limits, even me, you know?
Yes.
So it's like kind of making it a collaborative effort. And it demonstrates control. And it also is, I think the biggest part of working with kids is modeling the behavior you want to see in them. We are their full length mirrors. So if we are not regulated, they won't be regulated. So that's so important.
Oh, I love that. And it's so true. Like if we show them, even if it's to the point of where we're like, okay, I need to regulate, even saying out loud, like, okay, I'm feeling really overwhelmed right now. So I'm going to go lay on my bed, take some deep breaths, and then we can come back. But that's what I'm going to do with my body to feel better. Like we're modeling the self-regulation process too.
Absolutely.
Like it's so human and good to do that. We want kids to see that.
Right. And there's no shame in it. We don't want them to feel like, oh, well, I have trauma, so I guess this is a thing I do now. It's like, no, this is a good skill for everybody. When I worked in inpatient, I carried a racquetball in my pocket at all times. And when things got like a little crazy, I would bounce it. And kids are like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm trying to keep myself regulated. And then, I usually would like make it a relational intervention by bouncing it to them, and then they would bounce it back to me. And then it's like my little therapeutic trickery. It's like, haha, I'm regulating you too. And you don't even know
yet. Didn't even know.
I know.
I say that all the time. That was actually a line that I would say to parents a lot. I was like, really? What we're doing is kind of just manipulated work in that like we're reaching all these goals without the kids knowing it.
This is happy manipulation. Yeah.
Right. It's for the positive in that we're working towards something, but you don't even know when it's fun.
Right. No, absolutely. And then that's the other thing, making regulation a thing where it's not, it could be enjoyable. It doesn't have to be this like, it doesn't always have to be, I'm sure you have experienced this, where kids, like you tell them to breathe and they're like, oh my gosh, no. You know what I mean?
Is that the only regulation thing I can do?
Oh my gosh, yeah. And especially for some of my individuals that I work with, like breathing and really being focused on their respiratory system is more triggering and more upsetting. Especially if they're dissociative, because they're like, am I breathing? Is this my body? what is air? And then it's just like not good. And then they're in a full blown like panic attack. It's like, nope, yes. We're not doing that. So it's regulation can be fun. How we regulate ourselves as adults is usually pretty enjoyable things. Like, yeah. You know, mm-hmm. So I always laugh because I had one teen who was like, I go running every single day for, you know, self-regulation and for my self-care. I'm like, do you like it? And he's like, no. I was like, then why are you doing it? Do things you enjoy because then it works. And, you know.
And you'll stick to it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yes. I love that. It's so – I love what you said about taking the shame out of it too, of like right. normalizing that everybody needs to self-regulate. Adults have to self-regulate. You know, obviously in younger relationships, it's co-regulating and, right. you know, but like it's not the scary thing. It's like it can be fun and it doesn't have to be like go regulate yourself and take deep breaths right. in the corner of well, like – yeah.
And we also, it's our job to teach kids what that looks like. I can't even begin to express to you how many kids come in my office and then the parents are like, well, they just need to calm themselves down. And I'm like, okay, turn to the kid. What does that look like? And they went, I have no idea.
So yeah.
So it's like, if we don't show them and don't co-regulate with them or, you know, at least give them tools, like telling them to calm down feels impossible. It's like climb Mount Everest for me right now.
Right. You know? Yes. Yeah. And it is that so much of that, like that saying something like that to that level is like you're asking someone to climb a mountain versus take one step, which right. is, I mean, kids, hello. I mean, you know, like the right. attention span alone, you know, like nobody wants to do that, let alone a kid with a shorter attention span.
And also development anxiety. You know, yes. it's like, oh, looking yes. at the whole big picture instead of the tiny step that we could take towards where we need to go. Yeah. So yep.
I think of like ADHD too. Then there's motivation, yep. you know, of like all of those things where
oh my gosh,
making motivation. It so much smaller.
Yeah. Yes. It's like motivation really comes from being successful, not when you're mm-hmm. overwhelmed and feel like you're not successful or, yes. you know, doing the thing correctly. So yes, I yes. totally agree with that.
Oh, I love that. Well, I think this is really, really the exciting part is it, especially you being a music therapist and mm-hmm. doing trauma and music. What are some of the ways that you give those tools in music or that you work on those tools or all of that stuff within trauma-informed interventions?
Right. So it kind of depends on the client and also just, you know, their age and or level of development. Mm-hmm. I think my personal favorite, honestly, I really just lyric analysis with my teens, especially, and adults.
Yeah.
I mean, we could all relate to our teen days where we felt so connected to the music we listened to, or at least like I can remember shutting myself in the room with the song on repeat, like blasting original Dashboard Confessional before everybody knew what, who it is. And just feeling
same.
So misunderstood. And
I'm putting it in my away message on AIM. So it was like, you know.
With like the little stars and stuff. Like I thought about this. I'm inspirational. or even your MySpace page. Like, yeah, uh-huh. this is what I was playing today. This is how sad I am. Anyways.
I'm so thoughtful.
Yeah. Introspective I am. Anyways.
Yes.
So when we usually take the client's preferred music and use it as a means to process certain themes or feelings that the client may have. And also most children and teens feel really intimidated about processing their trauma, and rightfully so, because they're trying to assess if this is a space that's safe enough for them to do so. And this is also an opportunity for the client to express in a more process-focused fashion than content-focused. So we can agree that most of our clients understand why their trauma impacted them so greatly or why their trauma was so bad. And I'm honestly not entirely interested in re-traumatizing a client if they're not ready to share a trauma story. So this could be an opportunity where a song reveals strategies or tools for the client so the client can answer the big question that they often bring to therapy of like, where do I go from here? Not what happened to me, but where do I go from here? And also it's a huge rapport builder. It gives a chance for a client to feel seen and heard when it comes to likes and dislikes. I really like lyric analysis. But I also, for my younger clients and also my adults and teens, I have to admit, I really like using active music playing where, you know, improvisational music, especially accompanied by movement.
Yeah.
I love using instrumental music to focus on my littles, like with like impulse control, relational skills, communicating needs, regulation. I think my favorite of mine, when I worked at Mount St. Vincent Home, this was like my favorite one to use. They called it the four B's, which is breathe, breaks, brain, and body. So it was just an opportunity to kind of make it a playful intervention to really discuss that, you know, that tool of using pause and regulating yourself before proceeding. So it usually would use like claves and just like, you know, hit the claves repetitively. And I would encourage the client and I to walk clockwise around the room to entrain to the rhythm that I'm playing. And I would intermittently stop walking and say freeze, but keep playing the claves and encourage the client to breathe four counts in and four counts out. And then we would resume. And then I would kind of offer for the client to just walk in any way that they would like around the room. Obviously keeping in mind my personal space and the furniture in the room. And then we would just kind of practice that, you know, pause and that freeze more. And then when we would be like, you know, in like our frozen space, I would suggest for them to find a point in the room. And I would give like, let's say eight counts for the client to get to that exact point in the room. So this really encourages the client to be within their body and to explore their body and movement within space and time. And this is huge for trauma, especially because we so often dissociate or feel like our bodies don't belong to us. And these type of brain interventions are incredibly regulating. And we make it fun too, like by also like in training to the claves by walking as different animals or like a ballerina or a ninja. But it encourages the idea in the client to take pause before they act and to have their brains tell their bodies what to do.
That connection too is right. So, like you said, is so with trauma can be so disrupted. Right. So then to be able to say like, oh, how, what does this space look like? I have to kind of like be explore that awareness. It. Yeah. Well, yeah. It's yeah.
What's cool too is like for eight counts, let's say if it's a spot super close to them, they can really explore space. They don't have to like dart over to that space right away. They can really take their time and just really like make it like a very expressive movement. So it just really kind of taps into different parts of their brains instead of, you know, just like on go, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yes. So,
and I think it also on improvisational music or music playing, I kind of couple music playing with similar things to like EMDR. EMDR is eye movement desensitization reprocessing. which I'm total fan for. It's so good. And I love collaborating with other therapists that do it. But it's essentially the idea of alleviating the stressors associated with trauma by using an external stimulus while processing. So for some people, it's like a visual. So like a light flashing like back and forth across your vision, or like some clients will hold buzzies where the buzzers in both of your hands will alternate back and forth, or you could tap on your legs alternating back and forth, or on your collarbone. There's like butterfly taps, you know. There's so many different options, but as a music therapist, we could kind of bring in different instruments like drums or just, you know, recorded music. So it could be a less intimidating experience because some clients coming into EMDR, it could be very overwhelming, especially if maybe their last session was really hard and then they were coming into a new one and they're like, you know, having some, you know, rightful resistance, you know. So it could be just a really helpful experience to kind of, you know, facilitate the intervention and just kind of give them something novel to kind of work with.
Yeah, especially when I think of like, you know, the buzzies and, you know, like those things of like, or if you're, you know, doing the visual thing with EMDR of like, it's not as exciting versus like, oh, maybe I'm going to play the paddle drums to, you know, with the song and then do that, which is kind of like, I think there's that expressive element that it's the just added value, even if it's just providing added value to the intervention, it might lower that resistance and get somebody in there. And then it's like, okay, cool. We're drumming and doing EMDR, which is way different than using the buzzies.
Right. Or even if like sometimes even clients have music that they bring in that is kind of triggering itself. So kind of having therapists bringing me into the room is so I could be mindful of that. and working with them through that. And just not being afraid to disrupt the session, especially if you could see that they're getting emotionally flooded, especially with, you know, sexual trauma, when we're just like feeling so frozen in our bodies and we don't really get an opportunity to, you know, really like release that kinetic energy. So like just slamming on a drum or beating the crap out of like a yoga ball with drumsticks, you know, just like getting a chance to get that out. So helpful. So yeah, that's kind of how I use improvisational music, at least within that sort of setting. And I really love songwriting too. It's just so fun, and it's a great way to process emotion, emotions, and creating songs for reminders or encouragement. A lot of my clients will record their songs in my office, and then they'll just play it in their car ride to work, or like the parents of like my you know, pediatric clients will play songs that they have written in the car ride to school or to therapy or what, you know, to their psychiatry appointment, wherever, as a reminder of their skills and those feelings of self-worth that they felt when they created this, their little masterpiece, you know? And I think it's just my favorite to see like how proud they are of to hear the final product. When I worked in inpatient, I would leave a CD for the client upon discharge of like the songs we had written. And for, you know, HIPAA purposes, it was always me singing. But it was just a chance for like them to, you know, take something home from their experience in the hospital. And it was kind of funny because I would just be walking down the hallway and I would find patients hunting me down in the hallway, be like, is my CD in my chart? And just trying to find me. And I'm like, oh, so you enjoy this too. So, which I guess is like, you know, reaffirming as a therapist to see, but but it's just like, it's, you know, because music is so mnemonic, it's just like, and is so ingrained in our memory, it just helps to kind of go back to that space of where we were, you know, and just kind of be like, oh, that felt really good. Or these are these affirmations I told myself, and this is how I felt in the moment, and that just feels really good. And then you can just hold on to that.
That's such a like relationship glue is like, you know, joy. We know that like joy has to be a part of like relationship building, and like there it is, you know, and it's like, sweet, I'm building rapport with this joy,
right? And also just hearing your client, especially in the choices they make in their music, and then you're like, yeah, like, you know, when that one kid is like, I want all cymbals the entire song, and you're like, sure, man, let's do it. Yeah. We can do that. This is so overstimulating, but okay. We are matching your mood, and I love it. So it, you know, it's just validating of their experience, and they feel heard. And especially when it comes to their own personal genres, you know, I think like, especially teens, and they're like, so you're going to do a screamo song with me and you're completely willing to scream for me in the background. I'm like, yeah, duh. I'm 1000% going to do this. And it's just like more playful, you know, and like you said, it's just that relationship glue that you need.
And I think a part of that requires that we be really vulnerable, you know, that we cut of like, okay, I'm going to have to learn how to scream for screamo, or, you know, like I'm just going to throw it to the wind. And I think that that's really powerful sometimes for clients to see that from us of like, I'll be vulnerable too. I'm asking you to do that all the time. Why wouldn't I do that also?
Well, I think the biggest thing to combat trauma is play. You know, and creativity. And so if they see us being goofy and not caring, that is so empowering. And, you know, like how many like interventions I've done where the client wants to rap and I'm like, just be prepared that I literally sound like a Barbie doll trying to like throw some like bars. So just bear with me. And they just think it's hilarious, but it just gives us something to talk about. And they just see that, you know, it's like, this is supposed to be fun. You know, I think this is where we run into problems too, as like music therapists, when people are musicians or have musical backgrounds and they're like, no, we're going to do this and this and this. And it's like, that's great, but that's not the point of the intervention. The point of the intervention to explore and to be goofy and to just really, you know, tap into different aspects of like, you know, like our emotions or what we're, our experiences. So it's like, so getting outside of yourself and the perfectionism that it has to look a certain way, you know?
Yes. Yeah. And like that humanness, that it's about the humanness of it. But like, you know, I feel like so many times where it's like, I remember working in a hospital and it was like, you had to just like do songs. Like someone would be like request constantly. And so it was like, never played this song, gonna try it. But like having that humanness to be like, you know what? I've never done this song, never heard it before. This might sound really funny. What do you think about that process? And seeing like what a kid says, you know, if they're like, ugh, don't bother.
Right.
Then it's like, awesome. Okay. Well, you know, like that's great. Or if they're like, oh my gosh, do this. This is going to be hilarious. Then it's okay. We'll keep going. And then you can process it afterwards too. Right. Of like, what is that like for the client and just being human together?
No, it's so true. This is still an embarrassing moment of me as a clinician, but I will never forget this, where I usually would pre-check music that kids especially would suggest for, because I would do like a free play, like the last 10 minutes of our session, just to, you know, kind of just, you know, for rapport building and just because they were tired of listening to the radio. I totally get it. But the one time I didn't check, and this is when Nicki Minaj's Only came out. And I was like, sure, I'll just play Only, and did not check. And the first couple of lines are pretty colorful. So I'm just like doing a full sprint and slide to my boombox, and all the kids are cracking up. But it was at least like a moment for us to just like be human and just laugh. And yeah. I'm like, okay, so this was the point just to shock me, and it worked. Good job. yes, you know, yes. And I normally don't police music too much anyways, unless it's like, you know, unnecessarily like sexually suggestive, just because I think, sorry if this gets off topic, but I just.
Oh no, I'm already loving where this tangent's going.
Okay.
I'm right there with you.
Because I think when we police people's music preferences, oftentimes we unfortunately do it from a place of privilege.
Yes. Oh. Yes.
And it's not a cool place to be, especially, and I've had to do this rule with like, especially with working with, there was one agency who wanted me to work with sex trafficking survivors. And they were like, but we do not want any of this music played. And I was like, well, that's going to be very difficult for me. Because while this is not culturally relevant to you, it's culturally relevant to them. And we are totally robbing them of the opportunity of going, why do you like this? Why do you connect with this? And also just like, again, taking away more autonomy and their agency when that's already what's occurring, you know, in their like world. So it's like, so we're going to do it some more and, you know, just add more trauma and tell us, no, we know what's best for you. You know, and obviously my role for groups, it's like, hey, just be mindful of other people in the group, because while this may be something that you enjoy or, you know, you can handle, maybe another person in the group could not, you know. So, and I usually just have a discussion with my clients, you know, if I can't play something, or it's like, hey, I'll play this privately with you, and then have a discussion with them. But yeah, just that would probably be probably my biggest pet peeve.
Yes.
In our music therapy world. It's, and I get it. We're kind of thrown into facilities where that's a rule, especially with like profanity or like, you know, explicit lyrics, quote unquote explicit. Mm-hmm. It's like, but especially teens, they already hear this music anyways.
Yes. So what it's like stopping the expression of like, why would you, like, this is something that's so meaningful to someone. And again, like you said, to circle back to like when you're a teen or a tween, you are connected to that music.
Yeah.
And like, you're taking something that's so important to someone, to their culture, to their emotions, to their inner world. Mm-hmm. And like saying it's not okay and it's not good or it's not fit, like it's just so damaging.
Right. And it's like, well, even like as therapists, when we process with our clients and they're like using like, this is so expletive hard. And then we're like, yeah, it is so gosh darn it hard. And they're just like, what the heck was that? You know what I mean? Like when we don't just like say the language that they are saying, it's like kind of like this weird like policing and invalidation. And I think we kind of do it through music too. It's like, no, we want to like reflect that we see them, you know? And sometimes language is used purposely, so we know the intensity, you know? It just kind of, it just makes me laugh when I see it. I'm like, oh. And, yeah. You know, I think I obviously have a little bit more freedom in private practice. So mm-hmm. that does yes. help because it just, I think us leaning into those conversations versus being like, ooh, that's uncomfortable. Don't want to have that conversation. you yes. know, it's like, yeah. lean into the discomfort. It's okay. You know?
Yeah. And we know too, I think like knowing as music therapists, like we know how important music is. So like that's what we do. And being able to say that back to, you know, if it's in a, you know, hospital system or you're in some sort right. of system that's saying you can't do this, of being like being the advocate for our clients that we right. should be and advocating that.
I was about to say, and kind of like what we were talking about earlier, how we could kind of be yes people in good yes. Like, yes, 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 yes. I will totally do this. I will totally take on this client load and it'll be totally fine. And then yep. we just get burnt out. It's like, no, it's okay to advocate for your client. It's okay to advocate for what you do mm-hmm. and why you do the things you do. Yep. And it could be enlightening for the people that you work for, you know, and the people you work with. So
yes, yes. And like too, I mean, I think that developing that, if your clients, you know, not that they, it's not like you're doing it for them to find out, but say they found out that you did that for them, again, like what a rapport building moment that like, right. wow, you advocated for that for me, you know, is like, yes, like that's what this is all about.
Right. Especially thinking about how many kids yeah. don't get people fighting for them. Yes. They want someone to. So yes. it's like, okay, so as the healthy adult in their lives, it's like, be that person. Yep. You know?
Yes. Yep. In every way we can. Yes. In all avenues. Even when Absolutely. It's hard for us and we have to say, no.
I know.
I'm sorry. I have a point to make and I'm going to make it.
right. It's like, sorry, but no. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Totally worth it. 100%.
Mm-hmm. Because it makes it saying no to other things far easier if you start now. So.
Yes. Yes. I love that.
Boundaries and limits, guys. it's important.
Boundaries. Oh my gosh. Boundaries. It's just the best.
yes. They're my favorite.
Me so. Too. I was joking about them yesterday. I was like, boundaries are the mother of all the things. They're like, just if you have good boundaries, so many good things come from good boundaries.
no, absolutely. I mean, especially our agency and our things that like, and being true to what's authentic to us, you know, mm-hmm. that's where confidence comes from, you know? So mm-hmm. yeah, totally, yes. totally.
Yes. Being authentic. I love that. Yes. Well, so we've talked a little bit about how music can support survivors of trauma. You know, we talked about that right. combining it with EMDR. Is there anything that you feel like music does, music therapy, a quality about music therapy that makes it different than traditional talk therapy, of why that nonverbal way of processing trauma is helpful sometimes, oh my gosh, not yeah. all the time, but you know, compared to traditional talk therapy?
Right. Oh my gosh. So first off, understanding that bottom up therapy is essential to trauma treatment.
Yeah.
Our brains develop from the bottom up, inside out. So we usually experience trauma like in our middle part of our brain, which is our amygdala. So this kind of creates this like little cute stop sign in our neural network, which disallows us from reaching our higher functioning in our cortex when, you know, our cortex is responsible for our decision making, our planning, rational thought, abstract thought, executive functioning. And so when we're mostly operating out of our amygdala, that's why we are more reactive and impulsive, right? Because in trauma, our brain has worked to protect us. And it does not have time to have that stimulus go all the way up to our cortex. And it's like, hey, let's process this moment. It's like, no, there's a tiger in the corner of the room. It will eat you. You do not have time, you know? So this stop sign creates a reflex arc, which so in times of crisis, we can immediately react to our environment, which is awesome. But the part of trauma that's not awesome is the fact that this reflex arc happens outside of times of crisis, or it reacts in times of perceived crisis, right? So these trauma responses include like fight, flight, freeze, but I add two more because I'm fancy. I also have submit and attach. So let's say there's a tiger in the corner of the room. So I could fight the tiger. I'd rather not, but I can. I can run from the tiger. I could freeze like a gazelle and have my extremity shut down to minimize the pain I'm experiencing. And I find that most of my clients experience the following response, which is submit or fawn. So if someone held me at gunpoint and said, give me all your money, I probably will. because complying with this person minimizes the harm I may experience. So this is the trauma response we see most in sexual trauma and all in neglect and, you know, attachment, because this is probably the trauma response we see most depression and shame, people pleasing, all of those things. So, and then the final trauma response is attached. So back to the tiger analogy, I may hide behind my husband because I find him to be safe and secure. So when we do exclusively cognitive-based interventions with some traditional therapies, we're missing a huge part of what trauma truly encompasses. So trauma is not just a cognitive experience. It's a somatic experience. It's an emotional experience. It's a spiritual experience. So we can't solely treat it cognitively. So music therapy gives us the amazing opportunity to address that. Because conveniently, music is an emotional experience. It's a somatic sensory experience. It's a spiritual experience. And it addresses the bottom-up approach because we experience music so many different ways. We hear it, we move to it, we sing to it, we play to it. And those functions in our brain share so many other functional brain areas. So the neural pathways through music intervention sort of blast through the amygdala and limbic system to our cortex, because that's how our brains interpret and process music, which is super cool. Yes. And finally, because it's something we enjoy, it's rewarding. So it's a huge motivator for clients, and it's less intimidating. It's a less intimidating means to address the client's goals, you know?
Yeah.
So when we use music as kind of an additional piece and knowing neurologically what music does to our brain, it could be a huge help with our interventions that we use. Especially with like regulation, like you said, like those nonverbal moments, just taking the moment to use music and the properties that make it regulating, the fact that it's rhythmic and it's repetitive, it just reorganizes our brain and our brain loves it. And that corpus callosum is so happy when we play music because we're just hopping between our hemispheres of our brain and it's just, you know, it's just so many neurologic goodies. So, yes. So I think once we understand how trauma really works in our brain, you know, it just really helps to understand bottom-up therapy. Again, if we are regulated and our needs are being met, then we could get to the self-actualization and the growth and all those other things. But until those more regulated, you know, until we're regulated, we can't really get to those higher functioning, you know, goals.
Yeah, that access isn't there. It's right. So hard to get up there. I mean, even thinking of like naming a feeling is, you know, when you're right. Like in a really tough place and it's like, I can't even access. How do I even get there when I'm worried about the tiger in the room? Like,
right.
I'm not going to be able to do a math problem. Like,
right. It's like, quit. What do you do? It's like, no, I don't know. Right. Yeah. And I think understanding these trauma responses are super helpful, especially understanding our trauma and going, oh, that's why I did what I did. Understanding that your brain is just serving to protect you, then it takes the shame out of your response. Because I know I hear so often, especially with sexual trauma, why didn't I fight? Why didn't I run? Why didn't I say XYZ? It's like, well, because your brain was trying to protect you. It's like, if you did those things, what is your level of risk for harm? And they're like, oh, really high. Yeah. And it's like, right. So we can't put any shame in certain, like in the moment when how we decided to respond. It's, yes. You know what I mean? It's like, you didn't have time to think, you know,
yes.
And you're not operating in a space that you can really process that.
And that makes it so much worse when we hear of so much, which is, I mean, just so like perpetuated throughout our culture of victim blaming, shaming,
gosh,
where right. Why didn't you run? Well, this happened to you. Why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do that? And it's like, that is the last thing in the world, that the least productive, the most harmful thing you could say
right.
to a trauma survivor, because it is, you know, you're already questioning, why didn't I do the other trauma responses? Why did I pick this one?
But it's like there's no picking. It just does. So, and also understanding, that's why it's so important for people interacting with our trauma survivors to know what these trauma responses are, especially our justice system and our police. It's like, because especially when we're using, you know, like, let's say a woman's sexual resume, it's like, she's, you know, she had a trauma response and this is what happens, you know, or even, you know, parents working with the kids. being like, why are they just staring at me like they're spacing out? It's like, well, because they are, you know, they're completely dissociated. So it's like, so again, if we try to do the regulation over compliance thing, it's like, so if they're completely dissociated and you're trying to get them to do all these higher level of functioning kind of tasks, it's like, they're not operating that space. They don't have that access. So understanding, okay, this is what this is, and then offering support, regulating the child, that is where we get really successful and we can go somewhere. So
yes. Yes. And music is, like you said, so regulating. So many arts, movement, yoga, all those different experiences
yes.
tap into that like lower brain, regulate. Then it's like, okay, gates open. Now
right.
we can access some of these other places.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Well, you actually have too in your you have an amazing trauma series on Instagram. So everybody
oh, thank you.
Go follow Molly right now. It's like one of my favorite things whenever you come out with a new one. I'm like, yes, another one. But one of the ones that's really cool, they're all really amazing. And I love the you know, getting like the small tidbits of trauma informed mm-hmm. care, I think is so
right.
important, especially for music therapists, like we talked a little bit about.
Right.
Before
exactly.
we came on. Yes. And one of those was the six R's related to regulation.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about those?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So as we were talking earlier, I love Dr. Bruce Perry.
Uh-huh.
So much. yep. I was telling her, we stan Dr. Bruce Perry. He's just like the mm-hmm. so I highly suggest checking out his resources. There's tons of articles online if you just Google his name. That yeah. just are great, great resources, especially for parents. So, and caretakers and new guardians, it just really helps explain your child's brain. And it just kind of, like we talked about earlier, this invisible disability that is neglect and trauma, you know? So one of the big things we talk about in Dr. Bruce Perry's neurosequential model of therapeutics, there's something called the six R's. And these are six things that make something regulating. And I just love these so much because it encompasses so many different things that we do as music therapists.
Yes.
So the six R's are interventions that are rhythmic, interventions that are repetitive, interventions that are relational, things that are relevant, rewarding, and respectful. So kind of going bit by bit with those things that are rhythmic. So if we go back to the most basic aspects of us as human beings, like our heart rate, rhythmic, right? Or even our breathing is rhythmic. Or rocking. When we are being rocked by our mothers, when, you know, when we were infants, that is rhythmic. That's why it's so regulating for us. You know, that's why we soothe babies when we do that rocking motion. So anything that is rhythmic in nature and repetitive. So things that we do over and over again. This is why I believe yoga to be so calming, because mm-hmm. you do the same motions over and over again. Or that's why if you go into therapist offices, you'll see like Jenga always. I feel like we always see Jenga. yeah. It's
so
like,
good.
'Cause it's the best game ever. Right. And you do it
yes,
over and over
so
again.
Adaptable.
Right. And,
so adaptable.
And also another one that Legos, we see Legos all the time and it is so repetitive. You put things on the thing, right? Over and over again. Or, even like, you know, the squishies we give kids or slime or, fidget spinners, like those are all repetitive movements, right? So those are obviously very regulating. Or, my personal favorite intervention ever that is so, I mean, I highly suggest people to go get these, especially for like their older kids and teens. Acupuncture rings, you could get them on Amazon for like $14, like a whole like 50 pack. And they're so wonderful. So that repetitive motion of just rolling it back and forth on your finger, and they're like discreet. So kids don't get in trouble for having them at school. Which is my favorite, because mm-hmm. when fidget spinners came out, I went, oh no, I know what they're trying yep. to do. I know what they're trying to do. And it's so great. it's so great. But they forgot the element of it being disruptive.
mm-hmm.
So yep. I'm all for having like, you know, strategies that kids could do at any time. You know
yes.
what I mean? Because it's I just would always run into kids being like, well, music's my coping skill. I'm like, well, at work, you can't just like interrupt your boss when they're talking to you and go, excuse me, I need to regulate myself by putting my ear pods in. You know, it's like, no. So
we have to have several to lean on.
Right. Exactly. Diversify your toolbox. It makes things easier because some things are not as accessible as you think they are in the moment. So anyway, so an acupuncture ring, that's like repetitive, using it over and over again. And the third R is things that are relational, things that we could do with other people. And we talked a little bit earlier about co-regulating with children, right? Because they, again, just them going, what is to be calm? I don't know what that looks like. So us mirroring for them and being a full-length mirror for the client and just, you know, being with them, maybe doing a board game with them. Or like I said, bouncing the racquetball back and forth. That was a relational intervention. That was very much a purposeful intervention. It was rhythmic, repetitive, and relational. So you could hear the rhythmic feedback from the racquetball. I'm bouncing it up like multiple times, and then I gave it to the other person. That became a relational intervention. Mm-hmm. Relational interventions also could just be holding space and just sitting with your little and just offering that safety and security, you know, just like offering that healthy attachment, that healthy connection. That's what kids really, really need.
Yes.
And the fourth R is relevancy. And this is such a huge pet peeve of mine. seeing things that are developmentally relevant to you. And I just remember working somewhere and seeing like the 60-year-old man. Remember fuse beads?
No. Are those ones you iron?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yes, I remember those.
A preschool teacher's nightmare, right? Oh, they get totally everywhere. It's just a step below glitter, genuinely.
The first thing came to my mind, I was like, almost bad as glitter.
Almost as bad as glitter. Yes. But you just like, you know, take wax paper, then you iron it and it melts together. Mm-hmm. So I just remember walking on the unit and seeing this 60-year-old man playing with like fuse beads. And it's like, yes, it's repetitive. Mm-hmm. It was relational because he was doing it with someone, but it was not at all developmentally relevant. Mm-hmm. This person had suicidal ideations not too long ago. And I'm like, are you happy to make, is this good? You want to be making Christmas ornaments? He's like, no, I have no idea what the point of this is. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I feel like a little kid and this is driving me crazy. So I was like, okay, I'm going to nix the fuse beads. We're going to take those away and let's talk about more developmentally relevant interventions to use. Mm-hmm. Right. Or even kind of thinking of relevancy, like kind of back to the yoga, analogy, mm-hmm. yoga could be used on different developmental stages. Are we going to throw a little kid into like full-blown adult yoga? Probably not, but there's kid yoga classes and they're fun, right?
They're all animals and like be a frog and be a parachute and like
butterfly, all those good things. Tree. Adorable. Yes. So finding things that are developmentally relevant to the client, and also because when it's relevant, then it's more palatable for the client for learning. You know, it's kind of like the idea of like, we want to give the right amount of information to children that their maturity, their level can handle. You know, you're going to tell a kid about Stranger Danger, but not about Ted Bundy.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So finding things that are relevant to your kid. The fifth R is things that are rewarding. And we kind of talked about that earlier where, you know, I was telling you about my client who's like, I go running, but I hate it. It's like, why?
Yeah.
Do things that you enjoy. We do things that we enjoy when we want to calm down. Like, and look, I mean, gosh, like how many times after like a long day of sessions do I just want to come home and just watch something on Netflix? It's, you know what? I can turn my brain off for a little bit. It's rewarding for me. I don't watch it all the time because we could get into a little dissociative episode if we wanted to, using video games, you know, movies, screen time with dissociation, it could be really problematic. I have a lot of clients who could be like, I was doing that for 8 hours and I totally forgot to eat or go to the bathroom. Like all the hunger cues or, you know, they're just gone. So being mindful of that. So good plug to remind everybody that that's not always the case as far as, you know, like being like part of 6 hours. But we want to find things that are rewarding to us, you know, because we're more likely to do it again. So like when we tell, like I said earlier, like tell a little kid, breathe. And they're like, no, you know,
I don't want to do that right now.
Right. But if we tell a kid, hey, let's use our dragon breath. mm-hmm. and fire breath. Like, and then we do that. That is rewarding because it's playful. It's fun, right? So trying to be engaging with the coping strategies. And then the last one is respectful. So this one is incredibly important because we want to make sure our strategies are respectful to ourselves and to other people. So I think probably the biggest one that I could kind of think of, like example I can think of right now, is self-harm. Mm-hmm. You know, cutting is repetitive. Sometimes it is rewarding for our clients neurologically. It's addicting. Mm-hmm. Is it respectful to your body? No. Mm-hmm. You know, so kind of addressing that aspect, making sure that the strategies we use is respectful to ourselves. Because like, I think when we talk about quote unquote maladaptive, like coping strategies, like let's admit they work first off, mm-hmm. but it's like, we got to make sure though, that this like gets us to like, you know, that we're not sacrificing our like long-term goals for our short-term comfort, you know?
Yes. Yes.
So, the respectful aspect of the six R's are super important. So
yeah, I feel like something, and this was actually something we were talking about off air that kind of builds off of that respectful thing, is like knowing, like respectful as in like, you know, not harming other people. If you're, you know what I right. mean? Like you could throw something at a wall a lot, but you don't want to hit somebody either right. because that's also not rewarding. Or just hitting somebody, like that is regulating, but it's not respectful. But then, you know, thinking of things like, hand flapping or those different regulatory right. things for some of our neurodivergent clients.
Right.
Knowing that it's not disrespectful that they're doing that.
Not at all.
Yes, that is a very different thing right. than, you know, like that line of respectfulness and what's okay and what's not okay.
Right. And back to our previous conversation before we were recording, I wish we pressed the recorder button on that. That was so good.
I know.
But we have to kind of admit to some point when we are redirecting neurodivergence in their stimming behaviors or, you know, the things that they do to regulate. We have yep. to kind of admit to some point that it makes us uncomfortable, but it is helpful for them.
Yes.
So it's like, that is an us problem, not a them problem. So it's yeah. like, so my client's dad coming in, he's like, well, he's rocking. I'm like, neat. He is self-regulating. Good for him.
I am
proud of him.
Right. It's relevant. It's rewarding. Yeah. It's
respectful.
It's all the things.
It's yeah. literally all the things. So yes. it's, but he had to admit that he's uncomfortable watching him do it. It's like,
yes,
but we don't get to determine that is quote unquote socially inappropriate. Like not at
yes.
all. Like
exactly.
that is so harmful to our neurodivergent clients and friends. Mm-hmm. You know, just, yeah, absolutely not. No, I'm just, yes. I am not a fan of us trying to police that. So
yes, yes. And I think like sometimes reframing, like when you look at something like rocking or, you know, moving something in front of your eye over and over again, it's such a regulatory, it's to regulate. Like what an amazing adaptive way that, you know, somebody finding that for themselves. I think that's right. incredible. Why would we take it away by saying like, oh, this might be disrespectful, or we could say it's disrespectful
right.
because, you know, and it's like, no, no, no.
It's like, don't twist that.
Yes, and, exactly.
And the other thing is too, it's like, we also have to admit that we, like, you know, neurotypicals, we do it too. We bounce mm-hmm. our leg all the time. Psychomotor right? agitation. We bounce our leg to regulate ourselves all the time. So how is it that that's appropriate, but hand flapping isn't? Mm-hmm. No. No.
Oh, yes. Exactly. I love how you phrase that. Like, don't twist the word respectful to fit something that in itself, it's
yeah.
not, you know, not twisting it. So yeah,
it's like it's kind of like the simplest answer is like the one we're going to probably go with. If you have to do mental gymnastics to make something fit.
Yeah.
Nope.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then do that check-in. Is that like, is it just because this is making you uncomfortable? Because
right.
Yeah, we have to do that.
Well, and it's okay to admit that it is.
It is.
Mm-hmm. It's okay to check in on our biases. It's okay to go, okay, I'm uncomfortable. Why is this uncomfortable? And it could
yeah.
be because, okay, because I feel like people, this feels performative. I feel like people are watching me. It's like, yeah. okay, but lead with confidence that your child is doing what they need to do to regulate themselves. And that should be celebrated, yes. you know?
Yes, it should be celebrated. It's
well, and
so
also try stopping them and see what happens. It's not.
Yeah.
And like we talked a little bit earlier about how it totally violates their agency and autonomy.
Yes. So much. Mm-hmm. And if it's something that is working and isn't harmful, you know, then that I feel like that's on us to flex our, you know, if we have those biases or if it makes us uncomfortable, which is a hard process to go through. And we'll all continually do, you know, but it's so much more important that we do that for somebody else as a human.
No, absolutely. I totally agree.
Yes. Yes. Oh my goodness, Molly, this episode is jam-packed.
I know, I am so sorry. I geek out.
Oh my God, why are you sorry?
I just had so much fun.
I know, I'm just so excited. We're going to have to do another episode because I know we could just keep digging in.
Oh and gosh, yeah.
Yes, and I do feel like we talked a little bit about this too, but you know, music therapy and trauma is kind of underrepresented in our field, in the music therapy field at least. And having more people on talking about this and utilizing all of these different practices that you've talked about is so important for all of the clients that we work with.
Absolutely.
Yes. So for our listeners, if our listeners are interested in following up with you, if they want to email you, go to your website, where can they find you?
Okay. I think, well, first off, you could just follow my TikTok. I have like a lot of little tidbits and techniques that I throw out there. I love my TikTok so much. It's so much fun. It's Olive Branch Music Therapy. That's the tag. And my website is olivebranchtheraservices.com. So T-H-E-R-A, theraservices.com. So you can find my information there. I'm also on Facebook and Instagram. So you could just type in Olive Branch Therapeutic Services, and I'm there. So, and I try to post regularly. And on my official website, there is a client portal if you have any interest in scheduling an appointment or session. So
perfect. I will make sure to have all of those in our show notes. So it's super easy. You can just go right in there and click on all that.
Perfect. Thank you.
Cool. Molly, this is amazing. Thank you for coming on and sharing all of this wonderful information.
Oh, thank you for having me. I had so much fun. Anytime for me to talk about trauma.
All right. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode with Molly. Definitely, again, go follow her on TikTok, on Instagram. She just has so much information, these tidbits, morsels of beautiful information that you can really soak up on her social media pages. So go check her out. I hope you guys enjoyed this one. I'm excited. We've got a lot of really great episodes lined up in these next couple of weeks. So lots of great content coming your way and just really wonderful, beautiful, creative people who are taking the time to share their passions. And I'm forever, forever grateful for the time that they are giving and spending. So it's just absolutely lovely. Again, just as a quick reminder, if you didn't catch it on the front end, Out of the Music Box is now on sale for 6 CBMT credits, all about expanding your interventions to use Out of the Music Box. So bringing in other creative modalities within our music therapy framework, within our scope of practice. So you can check that out in the show notes and go head over and see what that is all about. If you're looking for a way to support the podcast, which we endlessly appreciate over here because podcasts take a lot of work, but I truly love doing this. But there are small ways that really make a big impact over here. When you hit subscribe on wherever you follow and wherever you listen to podcasts, that's huge for us. And even more so, if you leave a review, it is so powerful to just hop on and push the star buttons to just quick write up a review about, you know, what you're digging of, you know, what we're doing over here. And that's incredibly powerful. It makes us be more visible to other listeners who haven't found us yet. So we want to continue to support as many people as we can in the community. Thank you again for being a supporter of Creative Therapy Umbrella, and be creative.